Hi, it's Leanne Dolan, and my new book, The Marriage Sabbatical, is out now and available everywhere. People magazine chose it as an April pick of the month, one of the best this week. A hopeful take on commitment, they said, and an innovative story about marriage. Sounds juicy. The Marriage Sabbatical, out now, available everywhere.
You're listening to Satellite Sisters.
What's a satellite sister?
The person you call when the best thing in your life happens or the worst.
The person that gets you up, gets you going, and gets you through.
And every once in a while, changes your mind.
This podcast is part pep talk, part weekly check-in.
Like grabbing coffee with a friend.
Thanks for being here. Welcome to the Satellite Sisterhood.
You're listening to Satellite Sisters. Great to be with you today. I'm Leanne Dolan in Los Angeles at the Wondery Sunset Studios. Liz, didn't it feel like spring break today, even though we're not spring breaking? Because there was no traffic.
I know. Why is that? Where is everyone?
They're on spring break, Liz.
Oh, they are. Oh,
yeah.
See, when you don't have kids, you just don't understand the vast majority of people's schedules, you know, because you're not on a school calendar.
Right.
So you're right. I just zipped here today.
Well, yeah.
This is Liz Dolan. I'm also in the Wondery Sunset Studio. And, I was listening to a song on the radio the other day by Lizzo, you know, the sort of indie hip hop rapper woman.
Ooh, Liz.
Shoutist. I was thinking,
Liz,
should I have changed my name to Lizzo earlier? I think it's too late. But I was kind of jealous that I didn't do that way earlier in my life.
Yeah. Dolan.
See, wouldn't that be good? With two Z's.
Okay, is that all you got this morning, Lizzo? Or can I?
Please introduce yourself, Julio.
I'm Julie Dolan. I'm in Dallas, Texas. I'm the oldest sister. And I want my sisters to know I am a Red Raider fan. I am a Texas Tech fan. I got on board.
You got to have somebody.
That's all I've watched of the NCAA tournament. But it was enough for me. I'm all in on them. And I'm all in on Texas because I'm also rooting for the Baylor women who made the Final Four, too. So
right.
Very easy choice there. Texas Tech and Baylor all the way.
I don't mean to stump you with this question, but where is Texas?
I told you, no follow-up questions. Oh, where is Texas Tech? Lubbock, Texas, Leanne.
Oh, okay.
Got it right. Okay, 100% on that one.
And where is Baylor? Is that Houston?
Waco, Texas.
Waco. Okay. All
Waco.
Right.
I mean, Liz, it's a whole trip. We've talked about it on this podcast.
I know.
You go down, you go to Magnolia, you go to the store, you see where Chip and Joanna were, or you see all that shiplap. Then across the river, that's where Baylor is.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for telling me about it, because I'm never taking that trip.
Okay, Lizzo, you're not invited.
All right. Today on the show, it's jam-packed as usual. I mean, we really did have a lot of pitches.
It was a lot.
Most of which are not substantive, but we are going to talk about a lot of things.
We're cramming a lot of things in today for your pleasure.
We have a couple of food trends right up top. Julie's going to tell us how to talk to our dogs, which is exciting.
Which I need.
I know. We've all.
You're doing it wrong. I can tell you this.
All right. We are going to follow up with the college admissions scandal, more tales to tell. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to talk about what the New York Times called snowplow parenting, something I found very interesting. We're going to try to talk about Brexit, so God bless us.
Yes.
Yeah, we're going to give it a whirl today.
We've got a take on Brexit because everybody has to have one.
Liz has a freakish story of a woman who does not feel pain.
I know. I think you think that sounds like a good idea until you read the story, and it sounds like a terrible idea.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you why.
And then entertaining sisters, we're going to break down all the Theranoses out there.
Yes.
All the Theranai.
The books, the podcasts, the documentaries, the live appearances. We've been all over this for a year, but there's more, people.
Yeah.
More.
So that's the show today. That sounds like a good show.
It does. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So I want to start with, it's dog related, but it's more of a April Fool's Day thing, which was yesterday. As we record this, today's April 2nd. And I would say April Fool's Day is not my favorite holiday. Anything that involves faking things, I don't particularly enjoy.
Yeah, I'm not a pranker.
I'm just a non-fiction.
Humiliation is not, you don't like that. Right, yeah.
But Carrie, who follows @Sat Sisters on Twitter, which everyone should be doing by now, she shared something yesterday on Twitter that said, "This is an @Sat Sisters story if I've ever heard one." And she shared it to us. And here was the story from her friend, Erin. Breaking. the U.S. Open to add puppies to the ball person team of the 2019 tournament for the first time. All breeds welcome. And this was accompanied by a picture of a corgi chasing a tennis ball. Now, I enjoyed this. I immediately liked it. But I also immediately recognized this as an April Fool's joke, which apparently neither Carrie nor her friend Aaron did.
It was Aaron Andrews.
No, oh, Aaron Andrews. That's right. Oh,
it was Aaron Andrews.
Right. The sportscaster.
Yes.
Yes. So, or how about your sister, Julie?
I
did thought
you fall
it was
for
a
it?
True story. I thought it was brilliant, Liz. I thought, oh my gosh, the U.S. Open, how smart. What a new form of entertainment to add dogs to tennis. I mean, I was just imagining
two of
the
your
labs,
favorite things.
You know, the Goldens, or even some of those really fast border collies just tracking down the tennis balls. I was all in. I was just about to send it to my everyone on my tennis team. I was so psyched about this.
Okay, we wish this was true. We do, because it would be fun. But lots of Erin's friends called her on it and posted, like, the average post in her feed was, lots of luck getting them to drop the stupid goobery ball. Which I think there would be a lot of training involved in having dogs as on the ball person team. But anyway.
I don't think, I mean, dogs are very good with balls. You know, it was only after I went back and I thought, I wonder why they're working with puppies. That seems, that just, I mean, I was really all in on this. I mean, I was completely duped by this, you know. I didn't realize it was April 1st. And I think the U.S. Open should think about it, or one of the tennis tournaments, because it would be just a whole new dimension of fun.
Yeah,
to have those dogs chasing down the balls.
Yeah. It's sort of like puppy ball, but better. Because there are humans in the picture, too. Okay.
Yeah, and I'm sure the players would love putting those balls in their hands. Because, you know, they never notice their equipment, you know? They don't care what balls they play with.
They're not fussy about any of that stuff. Their equipment, their rackets, their balls. Yeah. No. They won't mind.
No.
They won't mind some goobery balls.
No.
Most of them are dog lovers. Well, speaking of dogs, okay, sisters, do you talk to your dogs? We all are dog owners. Do you talk to your dog, Leon?
Oh, yeah. All day long.
Mm-hmm. Liz, do you talk to Hooper?
I would say not enough. Like or he's just not a good listener. I'm not sure what's actually happening in our communications, but I think, do you talk to your dog, Joel? You talk
Oliver,
to Oliver?
Of course I talk to Oliver, but apparently I may not be talking to the dog correctly. And here's a heads up for you too. So there was a piece in the New York Times Sunday magazine. This is a cognitive biologist, Mario Gallego Abzena. And he said, he's been studying communication between animals and humans and dogs and humans. And he said that people tend to use a high-pitched tone, baby talk tone. Leon, is that how you talk to your dog?
I wouldn't say I do that. I mean, it's a slightly playful tone, but I don't talk baby talk.
Let me hear a little dog talk.
Okay, Steph, let's go. Let's go.
So slightly higher.
Slightly higher. Liz, but now baby
yes,
talk.
Liz, how about you? Are
just
you,
straight up me. I've just, yeah. Though sometimes it's like, okay, Hoopy, like it's sort of pet names for my pet. It's just a little more playful than I would normally be. Not so much in my voice, but in what I'm saying. Like, hey, Hoopy Scoopy, have you ever heard me say that?
Okay, that's clearly you've crossed over into the baby talk tone. And apparently, according to Dr. Mario there, that people tend to use a high-pitched baby talk tone. But this is only good for puppies, for dogs under a year.
Oh.
Older dogs don't like that baby talk. Did you realize that your dog might not like that tone you're taking with them?
So what are we supposed to do?
You're supposed to talk to adult dogs in a normal voice.
Like
speak
talking to
them
adults.
As an adult.
Okay.
Establish eye contact, Liz. Okay,
uh-huh.
That's what.
Yes.
And talk to them in a normal voice. Now, and Mario knows what he's talking about because he's been working with a border collie named Rico, Liz. Mm-hmm. I just mentioned that. And Rico can identify 200 words.
Wow.
Wow. Uh-huh. That's pretty good.
I don't believe that. I think that as well is an April Fool's joke. But He does say that, you know, that dogs are social animals and you are a social animal, and that, you know, you can communicate with your animal by using a normal tone of voice, mm-hmm. and also by maintaining eye contact and using facial expressions. Like, if they're looking at you, they can recognize your facial expressions, whether you're happy or you're a little frustrated with them, whatever it is.
Yes.
And that's the wolf inside them.
Exactly. So. That's what made them so trainable. I've seen all the Nat Geo documentaries about how wolves became dogs. And it's
you
apply
it to your own home, Liz. Okay. Yeah.
Well, it's now very hard to make eye contact with someone who's so short. You know, he's just very short.
That's a good point.
So when he sits and looks up at me, we're making a lot of eye contact. But if he's just walking around, I would have to be laying on the floor to be at his eye level.
Well, he's not going to pick up any extra words unless you do the eye contact. So I think you have your homework assignment. So keep that in mind. No more baby talk for those older dogs. Just talk to them like adults. Okay. That's what they want.
I think that, again, also works for kids. So I like when I think a lot of this dog research is also helpful in parenting. That's what I would say. Speaking of parenting, all right, I am here to identify a food trend. I'm here to confirm a food trend.
Okay, you're good at this.
Because I believe it has been a trend based on the number of Instagram accounts it has. Uh-huh. But I would like to say that I saw it in action last week because my college-age son, Colin, and his friend, Lydia, were home for spring break, and I saw them doing this. And Liz, it's cheese boarding.
Cheese boarding.
Cheese boarding.
What is cheese?
Julie, you know it. You're a cheese boarding pioneer. I remember having a party at your house, like, what, 6-7 years ago for a book party, and you had that giant cheese, nut, fruit, crudité display,
mm-hmm. yes.
you know, everything piled high. Well, imagine that on an individual scale. Okay, so you get yourself a wooden board, a cheese board, Liz.
Yes.
But you're not limited to cheese. Oh. It's really where charcuterie meets crudité, Liz. Oh. Okay, you can put everything on the cheese board. Just make sure that it looks beautiful, that you can display it on Instagram. And if you mm-hmm. want to, just go right now, # cheeseboards of Instagram.
Okay.
You're
going
to see that it's a thing. And
is this in lieu of a meal, or is this the new dinner? You just cheese board at dinner?
Yes, okay. Julie.
Now we've given up on bowls.
Yes.
Bowls are over.
Bowls are over. Okay. Exactly,
now
Julie.
Now people just need wooden planks and
some ramekins. If you really want to step it up, you're gonna also execute the cheese board with ramekins, okay?
Okay.
So,
okay.
I mean, I know, you know, my son Colin, he doesn't have a wide range of food he enjoys, but he enjoys the food he enjoys.
Yes.
And cheese is one of those foods.
Yes.
So when he was coming home for the weekend or the week, I got some cheese. I got a few thin crackers. I know he likes that. I used to make those little plates for him when he was little. He still likes it. Every time I walked in the kitchen, he and Lydia were cheese boarding. I mean, they were just setting up their own cheese boards with the prosciutto, with the olives, with the sliced up apples and the pears. I couldn't believe it. I've never seen him make food ever. So
that's nice, but I feel sorry for plates, right?
Yeah.
They're gone, right? I mean,
well, just the little appetizer plates, which you know I love. So you can cheese board with the appetizer plates, but I'm telling you, I mean, I couldn't stop them. They were just cheeseboarding night and day. And I know.
It seems like a healthy activity for two young people.
Right. But it's all about the composé, right?
It is.
It's a composition exercise.
So I like that they really took time. They really took time composing the cheese board before they consumed the cheese board.
Did they take pictures of their food?
I think Lydia did. Colin doesn't do everything, but there are plenty of pictures of cheese boards on Instagram.
Uh-huh.
There are many, you know, cheese boarding is its own hashtag. It is a verb. There are Facebook groups for people
really?
Who cheese board now. You know, it's just, it's happening everywhere, Liz.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is great news, frankly, because that's the way I like to eat, you know, salty,
just grazing,
sweetie,
snacky,
grazing.
But then you don't have to cook things. Now, the crackers and the bread, are those on the cheese board too, or is that a separate arrangement?
It depends on how big your cheese board is, Julie, and how elaborate you want to make it. So they were putting the crackers on and the bread separately. But, you know, just how big is your cheese board, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Okay.
And
that's
I think this is a pretty fundamental
and personal question, it seems to me.
Yeah. I think this has a lot of implications. First of all, for graduation gifts. We always get this question at Satellite Sisters. Oh, I have a 22-year-old, she's graduating. What should I get her? I think the answer is cheese board.
Cheese board.
I mean,
nobody needs pots and pans anymore.
Forget it.
No.
Forget the basic, you know, right, the five plates, the two bowls, this. Forget it.
No.
Just get a big cheese board.
Uh-huh.
If you really want to go nuts, get them some cheese. Starter cheese. Get them some nuts. You know what, though? You could also vegan cheese board, which is, if you're entertaining, vegans are an issue now.
Yeah.
I love, I mean.
Vegans are an issue.
Not in a bad way.
No.
No, it's just that
you have
to accommodate people. People have different diets. Yes.
Yeah, there are a lot of vegans out there in the under 25 category, Liz. You're going to see this, maybe. I don't know. But that's, because you've already mentioned you don't have kids. But you have to accommodate vegans now.
Yeah.
And I am grateful for them because they are doing good things for the planet.
Yes.
So that I can continue to eat grass-fed meat. So I appreciate that. But like you could cheese board without the cheese. So that's a concept that's going to blow your mind. But you could just make it crudités. I mean, I've seen cheese boards now that have everything, literally from soup to nuts to chocolate on the cheese board.
Uh-huh.
I don't like mixing. I don't like
savory.
Like cookies and cheese on a board.
No,
but
no.
But I do believe in.
So you already have rules. You only just discovered this last week, but you already have a policy.
Well, you know, I've been cheese boarding for a while.
You have.
I just thought, you know.
I think as our merchandising queen, I think you got to get on some cheese boarding t-shirt.
We need a cheese board.
Yeah.
Oh, you're saying a cheese boarding t-shirt. Okay.
Yes.
I thought you were saying I had to go.
We could have a Satellite Sister cheese board.
Yeah. Source some cheese boards.
Yeah. Wow, I'd rather be cheese boarding.
So I have a question.
Or how about ask me about cheese boarding?
How big is your cheese board?
See?
It's fun. It's fun to say.
That's so
I think an important part of any trend is it fun to say?
Yes.
And cheese board is a fun word.
It is. I mean, it's a verb. It's a lifestyle. So I think if you're looking for graduation, engagement, or wedding gifts, look to cheese boards. I think you're going to find a lot of answers there.
Cheese boards are our future.
All right. And then quickly, there was an article that someone posted over at the Satellite Sisters Facebook group, but it was a good one. It was an opinion piece from Frank Bruni in the New York Times about restaurants, what people over 50 want in their restaurants. Now, he just wants martinis, okay? That's fine. I'm not a martini person.
Me neither.
But he had a lot of other, he had some expert opinions in that piece about what we're really looking for. Like, we used to want loud and trendy and noisy and fun and hot spots. And now, I like Mo Rocca said, I would eat in a library. If a library opened a restaurant, I would be the first in line. I love Mo Rocca. And then Jeffrey and Ina were quoted. Ina, the barefoot contessa, Ina Garten, she said they just go to the same place over and over again, like every night for 2 years, and then they find another place. So she doesn't know any of the hot restaurants. They just like grind one restaurant into the ground and then find another one. And I like Jonathan Waxman. He's a restaurateur I enjoy. Mm-hmm. And he said that over 50, you go back to the original etymology of the word restaurant, which promises to restore one's spirit.
Oh.
Which I loved. I thought that was a good idea. All right. So I'm asking you, sisters, what do you look for now that we're of a certain age? What do you look for in a restaurant? Liz, you're raising your hand.
Okay. It has to be quiet. The noise thing is out of control. I want a reservation. I don't want to stand in some giant line or stand in some super crowded bar. Okay. I want a booth. Okay. I don't want to be crammed in next to anyone.
Communal table.
At a table. So those are my must-haves.
Okay, here's my list. Leanne, sometimes I feel like I need to wear a headlamp to read the menu. And so, and it's embarrassing to take out your phone flashlight thing. So,
you got to do it, though.
You know, so a little bit of lighting or a light source on the table that will illuminate the menu is important to me.
Because it is that fine line between, you know, low lighting and flattering lighting. Like, you don't want it so bright you can really read the menu.
No.
But, you want, like, a pin light where you can, do that.
And I know in the piece they talked about bar seating, that we're not into bar seating, especially if there's no lumbar support.
Right.
I enjoy bar seating myself. Frequently, I'm dining alone. But even when I'm dining with a friend, like for me, the best position is like a bar corner.
Yes.
Because then you're close enough so you can actually hear each other, which in a lot of restaurants, you can't when there's a whole table between you. Mm-hmm. So I'm into the corner bar seating. And the but I've noticed, like, happy hour is such a huge, it's always been big, but now I just feel like you can't be a restaurant without a special happy hour scene. There's a restaurant near me called Margo's where they call it social hour, but it's like from 3 to 8 every day. So
they're gonna call it cheese board hour.
Next year, cheese board hour.
Next year, there's a lot of cheese boarding going on there, no doubt. Lizzo, you got to get into that.
But the thing about it at Margo's that their social hour, it's in, they have a very loungy kind of bar. And the seating is just too low.
Too low.
So I'd rather have seating that's too high
right.
than too low.
Right.
Because you can't reach the cheese board
right.
and you can't get up to go to the ladies' room from the low couches.
Where you have to roll off the couch to get to a standing position. That's never a good one.
How about you, Leah?
Okay, well, we go out so rarely. Just because of our work schedules and our life and stuff. So I just reject all quick casual restaurants.
Oh.
I don't want to ever stand in line for food.
Okay.
Ever.
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah.
I hate it.
Right.
I can't stand it. So the one night I go out, I'm not standing in line. So that's I just take a strong position on that. And then the second is craft cocktails take forever, man. I mean, I know it's a thing, but like you order a drink and 25 minutes later, they bring you this thing. By then, you're done. I'm out. I can't stand it.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you don't order one, everybody else in front of you ordered something that needs to be mulled and
muddled
and infused and set on fire and
botanical.
Oh, yeah. My gosh, just come over, take my drink order, and bring me something, and then I'll be fine.
No, it's true.
We sound like we're a lot of fun. We want light. We want it quiet. We don't bring me my food.
Craft cocktails
you want to
are
start
like a
eating
whole...
at about 5 o'clock too, Liam?
Yes.
No, I don't have to be super early. I'm not Sheila. No, I can go at a grown-up time, but yeah. I can't stand the craft cocktails.
The craft cocktail is like a first course now. It takes about that long.
It takes that long.
Yeah.
It's just
so you just have to factor
that in.
And
then they're tiny. I don't know.
Okay, that's enough whining.
We're not going to get any dinner dates at all. Ever.
Just going to stay
Nobody's
home.
Nobody's ever going to invite us out to dinner ever again.
Stay home and cheese board and talk to our dogs. All right, if you want to contribute, let us know what you're looking for a restaurant over 50, or please post pictures of your cheese boarding adventures.
Yes.
You could join the Satellite Sisters Facebook group. You could just search for us on Facebook, the Satellite Sisters. It's a group, and we'll approve you. It's a closed group, so all your cheese boards will be kept private.
Cheese boarding is the new tablescaping.
It
That's
is.
What I'm feeling.
That's what
we
it
want
is.
We want to see
Liz.
Your photos.
That's what it is. All right, stay tuned when we come back a little bit more on the college admissions scandal and a few other things. But first, we'd like to thank a few sponsors.
Liz, summer is coming up, and you know what that means? It means you're grilling. You're grilling and
for
chilling
sure.
there
yes.
with your butcher box. What do you got going on the grill this summer?
Well, you know, here's the thing. Because I'm going to be up in Bend for a part of the summer, I'm having my box sent there, Leanne.
That's great.
Go on vacation with your butcher box is what I'm recommending. Yeah, either way, you're just going to buy meat and fish and stuff when you get there. Why do that? Anyway, I love their steaks. I love their scallops. The scallops are really good. And the chicken thighs, all good. I'm ready.
That's right. ButcherBox gives you peace of mind and easy to find high quality meat and seafood you can trust. It's 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, pork that's raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. No antibiotics or added hormones. And as Liz said, delivered right to your doorstep. And you can customize that delivery plan, Liz, right? Because it can go wherever you want it to go, whenever you want it to go. If you want to delay it a week, you know, speed it up a week, you just go to your ButcherBox account and you can make that all happen.
It's so easy to manage online.
Yeah. And if you're like Liz, you can take your ButcherBox on vacation, which is... That's nice. Nice to have something familiar there.
Yes.
So if you want to take your meat on vacation, sign up at butcherbox.com/sisters and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer, plus an additional 20% off. So you can choose salmon, chicken breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/sisters and use code SISTERS to choose your free for a year offer, plus get $20 off your first order. Thanks, ButcherBox.
All right, so as long as we're selling things, I just want to mention what's going on in the Satellite Sister store. Because, you know, we got a lot of good merch there.
Yeah.
And, in the Satellite Sister shop, there's a link at satellitesisters.com. There are a lot of ways you can get there. And I got a funny tweet yesterday from Noni, again, which follows us on Twitter, that said, on your website to buy a car magnet, any chance that you're the best can be a magnet? Because I had created magnets from some of our other collections, sisters. But because of the design of You're the Best, I didn't really make the magnets. But Noni asked for a magnet, so boom, done. I went online yesterday afternoon. Noni got her magnets. Even acknowledged on Twitter, like, thank you very much, bought it. So I'm not going to do this very often, though, so I probably shouldn't even have mentioned it, because there are only so many products we can make. Like, the cheese boards do not hold your breath. But anyway, thank you for checking out the shop. We have all kinds of good stuff there. And remember, you can buy our book, You're the Best, at Amazon or any other place online where you buy books. So that's what's going on with shopping. And thanks to everyone who follows us on Twitter, at Sat Sisters, on Facebook, where we are the Satellite Sisters Facebook group, or on Instagram, where we're at Sat Sisters. And your ratings and reviews on any of the apps you use. We're also very grateful for that, especially when you post reviews and ratings on Apple Podcasts.
All right, what else we got?
Oh, now, well, Brexit. I mean, sisters, I have to ask, what is happening to Great Britain? I mean, you know, Great Britain, that's our rock, our beacon, our lodestar. And England has come off the rails over this Brexit thing. Mm-hmm. It feels like when you realize your parents aren't good at living together anymore. You know, that's what I think Brexit feels like. It started with a referendum in June 2016, where Great Britain voted to leave the European Union, which sounded like a bad idea then. And it seemed 2 years later, it's not. But as part of that, Great Britain had to invoke Article 50 of the European Union agreement. And they had a deadline, which was March 29th, 2019, in order to leave the European Union. But they haven't been able to pass any kind of, you know, process for doing it. They've had three votes. Theresa May, the Prime Minister, has brought three different votes to the Parliament on having a process, a plan, to vote in a plan for exiting the European Union. And all three times, it's been voted down. Mm-hmm. She's so desperate. The last time, she said, okay, if you pass this, I will resign. I will just pass it, and then I'll step down. And they didn't even do that. They still voted it down. Yesterday, they had another series of votes. They had four different options they were trying to get passed. None of it got passed. So now you have everyone that voted to leave the European Union is totally dismayed. They have lost faith in democracy. And then everyone who wanted to stay in the European Union, they're also equally disenchanted because they don't feel like their elected parliamentarians are doing their bit to try to improve the process. So it's a mess.
It is. Truly the worst possible outcome, right? They voted to do this super radical thing, and now they've got no plan for how they're going to execute it. But I go back to your original point, Julie. It is like when you realize your parents do not have control of their lives anymore. And you we had to take the car keys away.
We had to move them
so we could like really observe what they were doing more. It does feel like that. You think they're grown-ups and then they start behaving irrationally. But because they're grown-ups, they have a right to do what they want to do. But it's a mess. It's a total mess.
I feel like we need to send some high-level delegation, I don't know who would be in it, to England and just, I don't know, get them back on a plan, get them in some kind of, you know, help them, assist them.
Assisted living. They need to be moved into assisted living.
I didn't want to use that analogy, but yes, they need some assisted living. They need some extended care.
Yes,
because
they do.
Their democracy has totally broken down.
Yeah.
Nobody's views are being represented in the current parliament.
Yeah.
Nobody. Everybody in the country is disenchanted with the democratic process.
Yeah. Well,
what's amazing is when you hear the tape of what's happening in the parliament, they're all just yelling all the time. And, they're all making noises.
I know. That used to be charming. Now I think it's just proof of just wild dysfunction.
Right.
You know? That's their thing.
But it is possible that they're going to crash out where they will have no orderly plan for exiting the European Union, and that it's going to have a dramatic and drastic impact on anyone that, you know, lives in Great Britain, mm-hmm. or anyone that trades with Great Britain, or if you're planning to visit the country. I don't even know how customs and immigration is going to work. Nobody will know. You know,
again, it's sort of like
nobody will have any idea. Should you bring your passport? Don't bring your passport. Should we let you in? Should we not let you in? Nobody's in control.
It is like when our dad totaled a car and then our mom and our dad both conspired to not tell any of us that had happened.
Right.
Yeah. Except now we're going to try to visit the UK and we're going to see, like, they crashed the car. There's no car.
I mean, it's not funny because it is
funny.
A mess.
Yes, it's
and
a mess.
It's a real mess.
But it's that same sinking feeling,
right.
You know, like, this can't be happening. Mm-hmm. You know, these were the responsible people.
Mm-hmm.
These were our parents, you know.
Yeah.
And
they unbelievably brought it upon themselves in a series of missteps, you know. Sure, go ahead and vote for this. It's never going to pass.
Yeah.
Oh, it passed. Okay, well, now I'm going to negotiate this deal, but I'm not going to tell anyone what's in the deal until the very last minute when it's too late to do anything. Oh, I mean, it is crazy that it's England. It did. Mm-hmm. I was listening to some report yesterday, and I thought, thank goodness we got away from those people. I mean,
that's true.
I mean, really, that American Revolution.
Well,
it's
the
great
same
idea.
Thing, we don't really want harm to come to.
No,
Great Britain.
Not
I
at
mean,
all.
They're our best friends.
No, I know.
I don't really know how we can help them.
No,
that's
it's a sad way for the British Empire to end. Seriously, that's what it sounds like.
I think the Queen's going to have to step in. I really do. I mean, it may be something as dramatic as that.
Yeah. Yeah. But I want the Queen from the show, The Queen.
Yeah.
not the Queen Queen. I want a fictional Queen to step in.
Olivia Colman is ready to step in.
Okay.
In other signs of wild dysfunction, you know, this college admission scandal is something we love here at Satellite Sisters because it combines a lot of things we're fans of. Julie was a college admissions officer herself. Leanne did a podcast about college admissions. And we also seeing, you know, the rich and powerful brought down. Who doesn't love that? So today's or this week's big news is that the tipster, they have revealed the identity of the tipster who led federal authorities to the Yale coach where things really began to unravel. And this was a guy, a Los Angeles financial executive who was being investigated in, oh, guess what? A securities fraud case. So, he was actually committing other crimes. So as a way to get himself out of the securities fraud case, he turned over the fact to the feds that this Yale coach had asked for a bribe. And so things have sort of spiraled from there. So it's just like a whole culture of corruption and no rule following. It is just a mess.
Yeah, parents that tipped them off, too. I mean, he was a terrible person.
Yes.
I hate to think of, like, that's what law enforcement is. Like, oh, I did all these terrible things, but, oh, my gosh, look, this guy did even worse terrible things. That was just incredible.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so, it's not like he's some hero whistleblower.
No.
In this
no, he was trying to save himself.
Yeah.
So that's what brings us to the whole snowplow parenting discussion, Leanne, because right. I wanted to understand what that was.
Yeah. The New York Times a couple of weeks ago had an article, and I had never actually heard the term snowplow parenting. Maybe because now that my kids are out of the house, I've just given up on parenting.
You're just cheeseboarding full time.
I'm just cheeseboarding. You know, I felt like I really focused on it for 18 to 20 years. And then, like, once they left, I felt like, well, good luck. I mean, I got things to do. I've been busy. So, you know, when my kids were growing up, and Julie, you're at the forefront of helicopter parenting, right?
Yes.
Where we spend a ton of time overseeing them and hovering and mm-hmm. and keeping them on track. But this idea of snowplow parenting is just literally plowing down any obstacle in front of them, whether it be a bad grade or a coach that won't put them in or a friendship that's not working. We're organizing their play dates. We're, you know, mm-hmm. cheating on the SATs for them or writing their English paper because, oh, they're so tired. And,
right.
you know,
yeah, no struggle whatsoever
right.
for the child. The child will only experience positive, happy things.
Yeah.
Won't ever have to do anything that creates turmoil, struggle, pain, anguish, you know, self-doubt.
Right.
None of that.
Right. Just plowing it down in front of us. And college experts say this is just a case of, or these parenting experts say this college admission scandal is just like the extreme end
mm-hmm.
of that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, you're not good at the SATs or, oh, you spent 4 years getting mediocre grades at high school. Well, don't worry. We're going to get you into the college of your choice.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is an extreme effort, but there are a lot of parents out there doing this on a daily basis, and they probably don't even realize it. They've done all these surveys of parents of kids 18 to 21, and, you know, large percentage of them are still making their haircut appointments, making their doctor's appointments, calling them at college to wake them up for, you know, an important test. 11% said they'd have no problem contacting their child's employer if there
right.
was a discrepancy mm-hmm. on their, you know, review or their pay. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Or they're, you know, now because you can email, you can, you know, Facebook, whatever, a lot of parents are very involved in communicating with the teachers, you know, much more so than even Leanne, when you and I had younger children, you know, so that teachers and coaches are feeling this, that, you know, they're getting emails from their, you know, from parents all, you know, they work all day and then they come home and have to respond to parents' emails all evening. I mean, it's really... So
where did you guys draw the line as parents? Because you can understand the
right,
instinct.
Right. And
you want to spare your child,
right.
you know, bad things in their life. So I get it.
Right. It occurred to me when they were in like sixth or seventh grade that they were good at some things and not good at others.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those things were going to have some long-term ramifications. I mean, math. That's important. But
yeah. And God knows you couldn't do their math test for them.
Hey, I was
no,
pretty
Leanne
good
was
at math,
pretty good
actually.
At math.
Oh,
but yeah,
so,
you do have to figure
yeah.
out, you know, if the, you know, if the child needs help, you know, you have to get the help,
right.
but you can't do their work.
Right.
And there was plenty of times where, you know, I would see I can remember in Boy Scouts it was supposed to be something where, you know, father, son make a cake. And so my husband and my son made a cake, and it looked like they made a cake. And then when we went to, you know, the cake award ceremony, I mean, they had professional cake decorators making
mm-hmm.
these cakes.
Right.
And, you know, that you just have to call that out to your own child and say you did a better job making your own cake rather than these parents who obviously paid someone to make that award-winning hamburger cake that looked like a hamburger in a
right.
bun. It was
those
pretty
nice.
Sounds
cakes.
Great,
though.
Yeah,
that
those are good
great.
Cakes. But that's sort of the most benign thing, the
yeah.
cake thing. I mean, it really becomes a problem when they go to college and they cannot do anything.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
like, oh, they don't like their roommate, so they have to leave school. And, you know, mm-hmm. they just can't get a handle on their work and you can't figure out why. Well, because you were writing their papers for them in high school.
yeah.
I mean, honestly, I think there's a lot of cheating that
mm-hmm.
goes on
yeah,
in high school.
Yeah, I think there are a lot more parents.
A lot of parents are doing work. And
mm-hmm.
I decided once the kids got to high school, you know, they have all those electronic grades now, Liz. You don't even know that. Like, they can
yeah.
take a test, and if you're their parent, you can be sitting in your office, and at,
you
know, you
can
301, you can get their grades, so you can yell at them in the car ride home about their poor grades.
Oh,
that
ooh.
Sounds awesome, right,
yeah.
as a kid? But I never checked their grades in high school. I just, unless they were really in trouble and stuff, and in some classes they were in trouble,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they had to do makeup and summer school and things like that. But I didn't do the work for them. That didn't
yeah.
occur to me.
Well, I just laugh because It's so the opposite of our parents.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I think they were good role models in that weird way.
Yes.
Yeah.
Who we have joked about the benign neglect of us growing up. But yeah, there was no snow plowing. I mean, the classic, you know, Jim and Edna Dolan response when we were all applying to college and we would ask for, you know, we asked for various help with things. Mom would say, I've already been to college.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. Like,
or they'd say, what grade are you in? Yeah. Are you going to college next year? You know, that they weren't certain of that.
But there was a lot to that, you know,
which forced us to be a little more responsive, that if you wanted to go to college, you had to be a little more responsible about it.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, there was an expectation.
Which means that
that
age group can be responsible. And by taking away that struggle, by not allowing them to, you know, make mistakes, to fall down, to get a bad grade, whatever it is, you really are putting your child at a disadvantage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, what's interesting about the snowplow term is it's preemptive.
Yeah.
You know, it's not reactive. It's not like, it's like we're gonna do everything before you start to get into trouble to boast you.
Yeah.
I think the other big thing too, the big difference in when we grew up and now, is we were not expected to be best all around.
No.
You know, everybody had a skill. Mm-hmm. People were good at things.
Yeah.
And now to get in, if the goal is to get into some of these schools, you have to take AP English and AP Physics.
Yeah.
And you know what? Not that many kids can really pull that off.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when I get suspicious of people like, what about your son breaks? I mean, I saw it. Your son broke up with a girl or the girl broke up with him. There's no homework that gets done for that semester. You know, they're done. They're out. So I'm like, didn't your kid, or, you know, Brooks got the bird flu and Colin got mono in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Both of those physical things took huge tolls on their GPA.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are you going to do? They got mono, they got the bird flu.
Yeah.
And so, but when I hear about kids getting, I'm suspicious. Like, how did they maintain?
That they can pull it all
for
off.
And just how did everybody maintain?
Yeah.
So the interesting, one last thing from this article is that, you know, experts say, what parents today, these snowplow parents, are focusing on their kids at 18. The goal is to just get them to that good college, and then mm-hmm. everything's going to work out. And she said, really, your goal as a parent should get them to be a great kid at 35.
Mm-hmm.
What you're really preparing them for is 35, not for 18. Do you understand what
I
mean?
No, I don't.
I think I said that wrong. Like,
no.
They feel like, you know, if we could just get them to a good, everything will clear everything out of their way. So if they get to the good college, then they'll figure it out.
So that's not going
to
happen.
And so they end up handicapping them. And mm-hmm. so at 35, they're just unable to.
Yeah.
So
they're
deal.
Not independent
cope
and resourceful.
Cope with being an adult. Yeah.
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 Right. So anyway, interesting.
Okay.
We'll put a link to that.
I would be interested in people's comments on that in the Facebook group. Okay. One last quick story in this segment. And this is the woman who feels no pain. So they discovered this woman who feels no pain, literally no pain. And she also, throughout her life, has experienced no anxiety or fear. And it's a very rare genetic mutation. It's currently written about in the British Journal of Anesthesia. I guess they were mad that she never needed any anesthesia. I don't know what. But anyway, I read about it in the New York Times. So she's 71, and it took them until very late in her life to figure out that she had this rare genetic mutation. So she had a hip replacement at 65, and they could not believe how degenerated her hip had gotten before she ever came to the doctor and said, hey, you know, what's the deal? That a normal person would have presented themselves way, way earlier. Hmm. And this might have been a clue earlier in her life. The article said, quote, cuts, burns, and fractures did not hurt either. In fact,
wow.
It often took the smell of burning flesh or her husband identifying blood for her to notice anything. Okay, so it is surprising to me that it was like she was 65 by the time somebody said, huh, let's look into it. So
it sounds so dangerous not to feel pain. It sounds surprising that she didn't have more serious injuries because, you know, she wouldn't have the same reaction that everybody else did.
I know. So I was starting to feel sorry for her, but then I want to ask you two, what if you were a friend of hers and she advised you, which she did to her friends, quote, childbirth is not as bad as people say. It's just a tickle.
Oh,
she says.
Okay.
So like, Okay. Nobody needs that kind of advice, yeah. right?
No, no.
Joe Cameron.
She should keep that to herself. Yes.
That's exactly what I thought, Julie. You can just keep your gene mutation to yourself. But again, if you're a friend of hers and she's telling you childbirth is just a tickle, I don't know, where do you go in that conversation?
I'm just guessing that now people are just tempted to walk up and punch her and stuff. You know what I mean?
Like, just to see if she'd feel it.
Yes. Yeah, or like, oh, let's just stab you and see what happens. You know, I mean, I'm just saying. It's just weird.
So it's weird to go through your whole life with this and for other people around you not to really know.
Does she feel emotional pain?
Well, no anxiety or fear, which is a form of emotional pain. Yeah. I don't know. The interesting thing about it from a scientific point of view is now they're looking at the gene mutation. And if more of us could have a touch of this,
right?
Like if we all felt a little bit less pain, that would be a good thing. But if we all started feeling no pain, I think that would be a terrible thing. Right? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I'm thinking of that swimmer we interviewed, Lynn. Do you remember the cold water swimmer?
Who could swim in the 34 degree water.
Right. She did not feel cold like other people. Yeah. That's why she was uniquely suited to do those Arctic swims.
Yes.
But this is different.
Wow. Anyway, is an interesting one. Childbirth with no pain, you know.
You'd have 10 kids.
I know.
No, you wouldn't. Maybe. I don't know. Hey, I don't know. All right. We'll be back with Entertaining Sisters, but we're going to take a break to thank some sponsors.
Hey, it's Liz and Leanne here, and we want to thank PROS for supporting this episode of Satellite Sisters. Now, you know, Liz, I've been out and about with my new book, The Marriage Sabbatical. The book is getting rave reviews. I'm very happy. But you know what else is getting rave reviews? My hair, Liz. My hair from PROS is getting rave reviews.
Leanne, I am not surprised. You have been on that PROS hair regimen for quite a while. I mean, you have good hair anyway, but now you have great hair because you've really paid attention to it.
Well, Liz, PROS is made for people, not hair and skin types. Personalization is rooted in everything they do, from their in-depth consultation to their made-to-order model. And you know what? I love the regimen they have me on. Do I take the hair vitamins every day? Yes, I do. Do I use my shampoo and conditioner made especially for Leanne Dolan? Yes, I do. I sometimes use the leave-in conditioner when my hair's really dry? I do. And I even have a pre-scalp thing that they give me. Okay, PROS, you're the boss. I'll take it. You tell me what my hair needs. That sounds good. And here's the thing. It's personalization, Liz. For millions of possible formulas, only one is uniquely Leanne's, okay? And I'm using it. PROS isn't just better for you. It's also better for the planet, Liz. They're a certified B Corp, cruelty-free, and the first and only carbon-neutral custom beauty brand. So, PROS, we love you. I love the photos of my hair. Couldn't be happier.
Photos of your hair. There are people in the photos, too. That's the thing about a book tour. Everybody has their picture taken with Leanne and then post it. So the hair is important.
Couldn't be happier, PROS. PROS is so confident that you'll bring out your best hair and skin. They're offering an exclusive trial offer of 50% off your first subscription order at pros.com/sisters. So you get your free consultation, then 50% off at pros.com/sisters. And PROS is spelled PROSE, pros.com/sisters. Thanks, PROS.
Okay, we have a couple of entertainment things we need to talk about, but I want to start talking about the Olympics because, you know, it's never too soon. We've got your 2020 in Tokyo, so planning has begun for that. Then there's 2024 in Paris and 2028 in Los Angeles. I've already blocked out all of those dates on my calendar. Because we consider ourselves Olympic family, and we'll pretty much attend any Olympics games we can wheedle our way into, but Paris, I think I have a problem, Paris. Paris has formally submitted breakdancing as a new competition they want to introduce in the games. So in competitive breakdancing, Julie, breakers would face off in battles as individuals and teams. So it's a judged event with competitors busting acrobatic moves to DJ beats. So, you know.
Isn't that a TV show? Isn't
yeah. It like, what's that? So you think you can dance?
I know. Yeah.
So you think you can dance?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is there going to be singing? Is there a battle? Is it like a, do we have an American Idol event as well?
I don't know. They said, their official statement, the backers of breakdancing, said they thought their sport would bring in younger fans and take up relatively little space to conduct. So first of all, I just want to say, how much space your sport takes up should not be grounds for consideration. That's not how you get into the Olympics. But do young people even break dance anymore? Apparently in France they do, but is that a thing other than on TV?
They certainly make a lot of dance movies about it. Yes.
So, okay. All right.
Yeah.
Well, my main hang up is I just don't think we need any more judged events in the Olympics. It's the athletes are great. It's kind of the judges that ruin things.
Yeah.
It's the judges that play favorites. They're a little too affected by the music or the costumes. And so I'm just down on more judges. They are pretty much the weak link. I don't know how you guys feel about that, but you know, I put a clock on it. I'm good. So, but the sports that did not make the cut for Paris included billiards, chess, karate, and squash. Right. Now, chess takes up no space at all either, right. But I'm very glad they didn't
they
fall for that.
They could have had that in the Luxembourg Park. That would have been lovely.
Yes, yeah. They didn't fall for that. Anyway, breakdancing, 2024, we might be seeing that.
I'm surprised karate is not already.
I know.
I
yeah.
am too.
I didn't realize
well,
that.
Isn't judo a sport there?
Yeah.
So I
yeah. would Taekwondo.
Think. And squash, we have other racket sports. I think squash should be allowed in.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Or okay. maybe that's a reason to not allow it in.
Here's what squash needs to do. They need to get some little corgis to go after those balls. That's
true. I would totally watch that.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
100%. Yes. I think you just solved the problem for Paris.
It's true. If you had more dog sports, that would be good. All right. Entertaining sisters this week. Here's where we give you our entertainment recommendations. Take them or leave them, basically. Okay. Hats off for The Fix.
The Fix. Yay.
It's really a fun yes. TV show to watch.
It is good.
It's yeah. a procedural, but it's soapy.
Yes. Yeah.
There's a soap opera aspect to it. It's kind of juicy and got a lot of twists and turns.
A lot of twists and turns.
And good, like, interpersonal relationships.
A lot of flawed characters.
Yes.
You know, the characters. Yeah. A number of villains in this show.
Yes. Yeah. So congratulations to the producers of The Fix, Elizabeth Kraft and Sarah Fain. We talked to them a couple weeks ago on the show. It is enjoyable.
And that's Monday nights at 10 p.m. on ABC.
Yes.
But I've been watching it on Hulu.
Hulu.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It comes up on Hulu the next day.
Which you get now with your Spotify.
I don't understand any of
it. I don't understand it either. I thought it was a joke, and I didn't click through on the link. I don't believe it. I don't know how that happens.
Anyway, just watch The Fix wherever you can find it. Well, in other TV news, I had at the end of the year, I thought I am just paying too much for all of these extra services. And I mean, TV is so expensive.
It is.
So I thought, okay, I don't need any of the premium networks. So I got rid of HBO. I got rid of Showtime. Like, I'm just going to have to, I have plenty of other things, including Netflix and Hulu and Amazon. But then when all the Veep promos started running,
yeah.
that the Veep season was starting again this past Sunday, and it's their final season, I couldn't hold back. I had to re-up my HBO. I cannot not watch Veep.
You can't right. wait. You can't wait.
Right. I can't wait like 5 years for it to show up someplace else. So I signed up for HBO, but the first thing I actually watched before Sunday Night Veep was the Theranos documentary. So
I saw that as well, Liz.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. So I've now taken in all of the Theranosity, all whatever you would, the whole body of work about Theranos. I read the John Carreyrou book, which is called Bad Blood. I listened to the ABC News podcast, which is called The Dropout. And then this Theranos doc. What was the name of the actual movie? I forget. It'll come to me.
It was sort of not a good name. I will look that up. Go ahead. Yeah. Carry on.
I actually thought, Julie, I don't know what you thought. I actually thought, other than the book, which is so detailed and so great, mm-hmm. I thought the ABC News podcast, The Dropout, was actually better than the Alex Gibney documentary.
The only reason I liked the documentary is because you could hear Elizabeth Holmes in her own voice.
Yes.
And part of the thing that is always so incredible about it is how did she convince all these smart people, not only the people on her board, high powered board, but all those smart scientists and business people that came to work for her. What was it that she had? What was her charisma? I still don't understand it, other than she had giant eyes and talked deep voice. But, but I still can't understand why so many people fell for, the fraud that she put together.
No. By the way, that documentary is called The Inventor.
The Inventor.
Right? Yes.
Right. It wasn't a good name, I don't think.
Yeah, The Dropout or Bad Blood was the best name.
Right.
I guess that, was already taken. I'm with you, Julie. I think the best part of the Alex Gibney documentary were her bug eyes.
Yeah.
You could actually see. She was famous for never blinking.
Blinking, right.
What is that?
It's like the woman who feels no pain.
Yes.
They're probably going to find out. I don't know how she slept at night. That's my husband and I watched the documentary this weekend at 6 a.m. because that's what we like to do. And and that was our question. Like, how did they sleep at night?
Yeah.
Perpetrating that fraud for years.
For years. Yeah. Yeah.
With people's lives in the balance.
I know.
I mean, people really were getting hurt. This was not a no victim crime or, just a couple of rich people and their money.
Yeah, it wasn't a software program like Best of Silicon Valley where, there is that famous, you fake it until you make it.
Right.
I mean, these were people's medical tests. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought the documentary kind of let her off the hook a little bit at the end. Let her off the hook too much for my taste because it was all thing. Like, she was a zealot. Maybe she really did believe everything. I don't know. I'm not buying it.
Right.
I think she was just a fraud and, would have known years before that this was not working. And because she was so vindictive with people who came to her and told her that it was not working, that's what makes me think it wasn't just zealotry.
I agree.
You know, at a certain point, you are harming people. Even if it's just the people that work for you that you're firing every time they mention that, oh, by the way, the machine doesn't work.
Right.
So, but if you can't get enough of the whole Theranos story.
Yeah.
The author of the book, John Carreyrou, I had mentioned on last week's show that the L.A. Times Festival of Books is coming up here in L.A. on Saturday the 13th and Sunday the 14th of April. And it's always fantastic. So many great speakers. So John Carreyrou is doing a panel on Saturday the 13th at 1:30. So I recommend that if you're in the neighborhood on the USC campus. But then on Sunday, the book we mentioned last week, Say Nothing, the one about the troubles in Northern Ireland, Patrick Radden Keefe, I think Leon's new boyfriend, Patrick Radden Keefe.
Yes.
He is on a panel Sunday, April 14th at noon. So, you might want to show up for that. There are a bunch of other authors on that panel. But I've gone totally down the Say Nothing rabbit hole. I watched that movie 71 that you recommended to me,
yes.
Leanne. That's like a scripted drama about a British soldier in Belfast in 1971. Then I found this documentary about Dolores Price called I, Dolores. It's actually her filmed testimonial. It's Dolores. And they're like, Belfast is my new Theranos. I just don't know. I don't know how to make it stop. Anyway, so he's also going to be at the LAT FOB, as we say here in LA. So I will be hanging around both days to take those things in.
That's good. I'm glad you're busy, Liz.
Good. And very soon the admissions scandal will be coming out in some form.
Yes.
So that you can hop right on that, Liz.
And the last days of England, when England just sinks into the sea. You're going to have the post-Brexit.
That's going to be interesting.
Remember the UK? Huh.
Yeah.
They were great.
Yeah. That was in our lifetime, huh? I guess I missed that. Yeah. Okay, you're right. So much interesting history happening right now in real time.
That's right.
In Fantastic. Real time, it's happening.
Speaking of that, we want to tell you, next week we're talking to Abby Ellen. She is the author of Duped, which is our Satellite Sisters book club pick. Duped is a nonfiction account. It's an investigation into people who lead secret double lives and why their loved ones don't catch on, drawing on her own personal experience where she was completely duped by this handsome guy.
Yeah. Very wild tale. Yes.
Yeah. So we will be talking to Abby next week on Satellite Sisters. All right, we would like to thank our sponsors today, MeUndies, Harry's, Robinhood, and The New Yorker. Thank you so much for supporting us. And thanks to you for supporting the people who support us. We appreciate that, Satellite Sisterhood. We would also like to thank our engineer, Sergio Enriquez. Thank you, Sergio, for making us sound great every week. We appreciate that. All right, time for our to-dos. What do you got, Liz? What do you got on your to-do?
Well, it's funny, we've been talking about dogs a lot today. I don't want to get into too many details, but I'll just say this. Hooper has a very delicate gastrointestinal system.
Yep, say no more.
We have some issues going on, so I'm taking Hooper to the vet today. I'll be curious to see what tone of voice the vet uses when talking to Hooper.
Julie. Talk to Hooper as an adult.
Yes.
He's
okay.
An adult.
Okay. We're going to the vet today.
Julie, how about you?
Well, I just signed up and I want to recommend everyone to do the same to the new brand new Instagram account for Meghan and Harry. It's Sussex Royal.
Oh.
That's SussexRoyal. And you can follow Meghan and Harry on Instagram.
That is exciting. Julie, I'm going to do it right now. As soon as we hang up, I got
to
do that.
It's a good to do. Yeah.
Okay. And I, Eileen Dolan, have a lot of reading to do because we always put together our Satellite Sisters summer reading books.
Oh,
and
are you going to do that?
Yeah, I'm going to do that again,
really,
but I have to get a reading. And I would like to, solicit recommendations from people. We generally look for newer books. So not books that have been out for a long time. If there's something you've read this winter that's new that you loved, I'll start a thread on the Satellite Sisters Facebook group. But we have an exciting interview lined up for June. I will tell you about in a couple of weeks with an author who has a big book coming out this summer, but then we'll put together a list of other books for you. So I have to get reading.
Okay.
That is my to-do list.
Do it.
Yeah. All right. Anything else, girls?
That's it. Have a good week.
Yeah, you too. Don't forget, call your Satellite Sisters.